In my first or second year of priesthood, I was home, and when I go home, I preach at the parish that my parents go to, which is also the parish that I went to from 8 years old till after college. It's kind of intimidating because the prophet is not known in his hometown, right? And your parents are there, and like your fifth grade teacher, and your brothers are there who are like this while you're trying to preach, you know? So I dutifully prepared a homily on the gospel reading, and I was kind of nervous, and I was kind of getting myself psyched up to preach, and we started the mass. I was like, okay, be calm, be calm, be calm. So then the lector gets up to proclaim the second reading that you all just heard today. So he reads the line, "Wives should be subordinate to their husbands." And he stops, takes his glasses off, leans on the ambo and goes, "Get used to it, ladies." Puts his glasses on and continues to read. They don't teach us in seminary what to do. My immediate response was to beat him to death with the scriptures, but I knew I couldn't do that. So I froze in a panic. I said, "Never again will I be unprepared when this reading comes up." So many people want to say this reading is sexist. St. Paul is a misogynist. Not really. Actually, this second reading is very pro-woman. It's actually a very beautiful reading when we understand what's actually going on. So to do that, we have to turn off our 21st century minds and go back to the first century. Not that they were stupid back then, but that they had a different understanding. We have to realize that we're about 30 years after Christ's public ministry. So the letters, the scriptures, the faith are starting to move out. We have to go from the Holy Lands to Turkey. So it's taking a while for things to get out there. The people in the audience, or reading this letter, were probably still kind of Jewish if they've converted to Christianity, kind of pagan if they've converted to Christianity. So there's lots of mixing going on here. So St. Paul is getting up to teach them what a Christian marriage truly is and what Christian relationships truly are. So we have to go back to Genesis to see what that is. Genesis 2:18, God says to Adam, "I will make for you a suitable partner or helpmate." In Genesis 2:24, it says the two become one flesh. This is what our relationships should be. Complementary relationships. Man and wife coming together to build each other up, to help one another to become saints. But we all know what happens in Genesis 3. The fall happens, and sin enters into the human experience. And right away, Adam and Eve start going after each other. Today in our society, we're talking about what a marriage is. And some people will point out, well, you know what? There's polygamy in the Bible. What are you Bible beaters going to say about that? Well, we say, yeah, Genesis 4. Lamech, we're told, took a second wife. God didn't instruct him to do that. He did it all on his own because he'd allowed sin into his life. When we go through the rest of the Old Testament, yeah, we see some pretty ugly, nasty things, especially when it comes to our women. They're used, abused, mistreated. They're used as political pawns to bring warring factions together, unite kingdoms. So yeah, sin is that reality, and sin is corrupting our relationships. Even when Jesus shows up on the scene, in Matthew 19, the Pharisees, the religious leaders, turn to him and say, "Ha, how about this one? Moses himself said that we can divorce our wives." It was codified into the law. So yes, things are pretty ugly and nasty. When sin gets into our relationship, this is what follows. So this is the background that St. Paul is preaching to. So when St. Paul gets up there and says, "Wives, be subordinate to your husbands," nobody, male or female, would flinch. They're like, "Yeah, nothing new here. Keep going, preacher boy." But now we're moving into the Christian era. When Jesus was given that argument by the Pharisees, he responded. He said, "You are correct." He said, "Moses did, in fact, allow you to divorce your women." But he continues. He said, "It's because of the hardening of your hearts, sin. But this was not how it was supposed to be from the beginning." Christ is calling us back to pre-fall, back to pre-sin. Earlier in the letter to the Ephesians 1:7, we're told, "In Christ we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of sins." So sin is a reality, but we don't have to live in it. Christ, through his death upon the cross, will allow our sins to be forgiven so that we can come together and truly have these beautiful relationships that we are called to have. This is the good news. This is the gospel. St. Paul, however, does make a number of very radical statements in today's second reading. None of you flinched because you're like, "Yeah, of course, that's what we should be doing." But this is after 2,000 years of Christianity. So what are those radical sayings that St. Paul gave us? The radical sayings are, husbands must love their wives as Christ loved the church. Husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. When these statements were made, people would have sat up and said, "What? What did you say? Did I hear that correctly?" This is what's radical about St. Paul's letter. So St. Paul isn't diminishing woman. He's actually elevating woman. He's saying to the men, get the sin out of your hearts and realize you have an equal. You have a partner, someone whom you should love and be ready to die for as Christ died for his own church. That's what's really radical. So Christianity said is spreading. 60 AD, we still don't have all the Gospels. We don't have all the letters. So the story of Christ is going to take a while to get out. And what people are going to start to hear about is Christ's birth. The Virgin gives birth. Interesting. So St. Paul and Jesus are saying, being a wife is elevated, being a woman is elevated, but now we have this office of virginity. Virginity is something that we can imitate in our Blessed Mother. Another option in helping us to become saints. As Catholic Christians, when we celebrate virginity, what are we saying about women? We're saying that women have intrinsic worth. Here's why. A consecrated virgin will not be a helpmate to a husband. A consecrated virgin will not give pleasure, if you know what I'm saying, to a husband. A consecrated virgin will not give children to a husband. Not that these three things are bad. Remember, Mary was a wife and Mary was a mother, so that's elevated again. But in saying that, what are we saying about our women? We're saying that they have intrinsic value because of who they are and what they are, children of God, and not what they will do for someone else. This is true feminism. This is the feminism we should all be working to bring about. Recapturing that understanding that women are beautiful in and of themselves, and have something to offer to us just because they are women. Our women shouldn't be trying to be men, and God help us, vice versa. Our women should say, I have something to offer to the world because I am a woman, and I bring that gift to the world. So this is the ideal that we've been given in Christianity. Let's step out of Christianity for a second, and we'll come back, because we struggle at times as Christians to do this, but those are the ideals. 600 years after Jesus, another person starts to walk the earth, named Muhammad. I'm going to say a couple things that are very true, but in our PC world might make a few people uncomfortable. My sources are the Quran and the Hadiths, the official teaching of the Muslim faith. Muhammad had a different take on woman and womanhood. One of the things he did was reintroduce polygamy. He had 14 wives. I don't know how you respect the dignity of a woman when you have 14 of them. One of his wives was 6 years old when he married her. But he was a gentleman and didn't consummate till she was 9. He was 53. How does that protect the dignity of woman? When he went and did his raids, he took slaves for himself, who were women, and gave women to his friends who invaded with him as prizes, as booty, for helping them in his conquests. What you see going on in the Middle East today is exactly what Muhammad did. It's exactly what it says in the Quran and in the Hadiths. I'm not bashing Islam. I'm telling you exactly what they teach. Go read the Quran. Go read the Hadiths. Our society today is moving into a post-Christian worldview of womanhood. We talk about feminism, but I wonder, is it the true feminism we talk about? And I say that because we objectify women more and more and more. And unfortunately, they allow themselves to be objectified as well. Case in point, the Super Bowl, a couple years ago, 2013. Beyoncé was the halftime show. She dressed provocatively. She shook seductively. And yet, this is what's held up to us as a successful woman. She's a beautiful woman. She's a wonderful singer. She's a nice dancer. But why did she feel she had to do that? When you looked around the stage, there were all women on the stage. All of them dressed the same way, and all of them were shaking the same way. Must have been kind of windy that day at the Super Bowl. Why do we feel that we have to have our women do this? Why do women feel that they have to do this to entertain us? How does that elevate the dignity of woman to have them dance like Salome in front of 1 billion or 2 billion people? I have parents come to me, usually moms, who are like, ah, my daughters, the way they dress. And they all say the same thing. They say, well, we can't find clothes that covers the other 97% of their body. Well, that's not true. The customers are always right. We are the consumers. We are the customers. We dictate to the producers what we will and what we will not buy. Case in point, this week, Hilton Hotels put an announcement out saying that they are no longer going to show pay-per-view adult films at any of their 540 hotels. The reason why was because they were getting complaints, up to 1,000 complaints a day, saying, we don't want this junk in our hotel rooms. We don't want our children seeing this. We don't want to be tempted while we're on the road with a business trip. We don't want to take part in the desecration of our women. So a major international hotel said, you're right. You're the consumer. We're going to change our business practices. It breaks my heart when I see our young ladies especially walk around dressed like that. I say, where's your self-worth? Where's your dignity? You want us ogling you? Is that what you want us to do? Because we do. I know I'm a priest, but you know what? You walk by, it's hard. Cuss to the eyes. Please, God, help me. Is that really where you find your worth? Is that really where you find your dignity? Don't you want people to love you and respect you for what's here and what's in your heart and what's in your soul and not because of your body parts? That is not feminism. That is allowing yourself to be submissive to the lustfulness of men. We also, as Christians, have to go back to that understanding of marriage. A partner, a life partner, till death do us part. And men, we need to step up. We need to live out those vows for richer, for poorer, for sickness and health. I will love you and honor you till the day I die. Not when I'm a little tired of you. Not when my secretary looks a little better than you. But it's me and you till the day I die or you die. That's where we both find our dignity, husband and wife, in that beautiful marital embrace. So yes, wives should be submissive to their husbands, because husbands must be willing to die for their wives. When the two flesh become one, there's one mind, there's one soul, there's one body. So if I submit to my wife, or she submits to my husband, then the two are submitting to themselves. That is the beautiful teaching of Christianity. That is the gift that God has given to us. And that is the gift that we have to give to our world. So let's redouble our efforts to build each other up in love and Christian charity, and not tear each other down in lust and domination.